From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Sunnyvale, down by Great America.
Sunset District.
In between Cupertino and Saratoga.
San Jose.
Oakland. Antioch.
Coming up, being transgender. We'll see how a San Francisco elementary school created a model that the city, state, and maybe even the nation would follow.
If they were here and they met some of our students who are on the gender spectrum, they would feel the heartbreak knowing that that child is wetting their pants because they don't feel safe going to the bathroom.
Then we'll stay in San Francisco to hear about a groundbreaking program to provide better health care to the city's transgender residents.
We were building a boat as we were sailing it, and our job was really to try and keep it sailing and not let anybody drown in the process.
What does it mean to be trans in the Bay Area? That's today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. We're living in pivotal times for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. And it goes far beyond the tragedy just over a week ago in Orlando that claimed the lives of 49 people. It was a year ago this week that the Supreme Court made same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states for the first time. And so much else happened in the past year. The TV show Transparent won multiple Emmys. An Olympian who was once the world's greatest male athlete came out as transgender. States like North Carolina and Mississippi passed anti-LGBT legislation this year. And other states like California passed their own measures to make restrooms non-discriminatory. In these times, we can find the inspiration for change in unexpected places, like a public elementary school in San Francisco that put itself ahead of the headlines, a school that changed the signage on the bathrooms for its 5- and 6-year-olds last fall, before the controversy over non-gendered bathrooms hit the national stage. KALW's Luisa Cardosa has that story.
Sam Bass is the principal at Mira Loma Elementary in San Francisco. He says he's often talking with parents, and he once had a conversation about how some students on the gender spectrum were not comfortable going to the bathroom at Mira Loma.
In fact, one of them was having difficulties so much that he was wetting himself instead of going to the bathroom. And that's just not okay.
When the school went through renovations, a teacher proposed something new. Instead of having boys and girls single-stall bathrooms, why not make them both gender neutral? Bass says it was pretty simple. They just changed the signs. And when people learned to change their language identifying the restrooms, student needs were met.
You know, student need drives every decision you make at a school, and that was what our students needed, and that's what we did, and that's what we believe in here.
The city of San Francisco believes in that too. So much so, the Board of Supervisors put forth its own legislation following the path set by Mira Loma Elementary.
And with that, colleagues, can we take this item, same house, same call? Without objection, the ordinance passes unanimously on the first reading.
Beginning next month, the city will require single-stall restrooms in existing public buildings to be made all-gender, and any new buildings must have at least one all-gender bathroom on each floor. The author of the legislation, Supervisor David Campos, says the city's been thinking about all-gender restrooms for a long time. But it took a conversation with Teresa Sparks, the transgender executive director of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, to really get the wheels turning and the legislation to be drafted.
And then the timing was such that when we weren't thinking about it, you know, these states like North Carolina and others were taking some pretty horrible steps back in terms of the rights of transgender men and women. We weren't planning on it, but it turns out that as we were talking about giving people more rights, other states were talking about taking rights away.
As we all know, we have a problem.
That's North Carolina State Senator Buck Newton.
The city of Charlotte, their city council, has decided to push a very radical and dangerous policy and thrust itself into the spotlight by passing this ordinance that allows men to share the bathroom and shower facilities with young girls and women. That's why we're here today. Charlotte's ordinance clearly violates common sense.
Newton was speaking on March 23rd about HB2, the North Carolina legislation that does two things. It prevents transgender people from using restrooms for the gender they identify with, and it blocks cities and counties from passing protections against LGBT discrimination. The law passed that night. And while that may seem surprising here in the Bay Area, according to polls, it's a popular position nationally. In the last few months, there have been more than 100 active bills in 22 states affecting LGBT rights in some way. These have led to reprimands by the federal government, as well as companies threatening to take their business away. And they've certainly angered lawmakers like San Francisco Supervisor David Campos.
The idea that someone can use their own religious views, you know, to discriminate against someone goes against the very basic foundation of our country, you know, and especially because something like this has ramifications that go beyond adults, because some of the folks who are the most impacted can be children, you know, and I would imagine that a basic tenet of who we are as a country is that we want the safety of every child. And in the end, that's what this is about.
Back at Mira Loma Elementary, Principal Sam Bass says he's received a few letters from other places in the country, letters from people expressing their religious disdain, but he's just ignored them.
People don't have full perspectives of why we do what we do, and they think that they do. So, you know, if they were here and they met some of our students who are on the gender spectrum, they would feel the heartbreak knowing that that child is wetting their pants because they don't feel safe going to the bathroom.
That's no longer the case for kids at Mira Loma. But the debate continues around the country. In San Francisco, I'm Luisa Cardoza for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Last week, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee named Teresa Sparks as his senior advisor on transgender issues. It's another sign that the city is more trans-conscious than much of the rest of the country. Luisa Cardoza now joins me in studio to talk more about just how far ahead San Francisco is. Hey, Luisa.
Hey, Hannah. Yes, so there is a San Francisco program called Transgender Health Services. They are a division of the San Francisco Department of Public Health, and they've been operating for about 3 years now.
Okay, so what has the program been doing?
Well, the main purpose is to give better access to gender reassignment surgeries for transgender folks. And they also do things like provide therapy services. They help prepare their clients for the surgeries and recovery. And they also help them navigate the healthcare system in order to pay for these surgeries.
Okay, so who is it for?
It's for people who are receiving Medi-Cal, or they may be a part of the San Francisco Health Plan, Healthy San Francisco, or they may simply just be uninsured.
So these then are already people who do not have a lot of resources.
Yes. I spoke with the director of the program, Julie Graham, and they say many of their clients are some of the poorest people in the city. People of color, immigrants, people who are isolated.
All of those folks experience healthcare disparities, meaning that they're going to have, for the same surgery as the next person over, for the same medical procedure as the next person over, they have an increased likelihood of having a bad outcome.
So it's important then that they get special attention, which this program provides. So I'm curious, Luisa, about how this program came to be. Can you tell us about that?
So that's an interesting piece of this. Back in November of 2012, the city gave the green light to transgender health services to start. There's a need. Let's develop a program. Go, right? Not so much.
What we were doing early on was scrambling to create a program, trying to get ideas about best practices, trying to get a process, you know, from referral to surgeon. How does that work? It didn't exist, so it all had to be created.
I would also think one of those challenges would be access. I mean, how many surgeons are actually out there doing these kinds of surgeries?
Right, that is definitely an issue, though Julie Graham says that San Francisco does have more genital surgeons than most cities. Mm-hmm. But there's still a need, and there is an extended wait for certain operations like vaginoplasty and phalloplasty. I mean, there's not a specific residency program out there for gender reassignment surgery.
Because it isn't just about, let's get some gender surgeons at the general. It is about how do we train people so that there are more providers out here doing this work and doing it well.
So are all of the surgeons they work with here in San Francisco?
No, actually, and that's another important point. Transgender Health Services want all the reassignment surgeries to happen at San Francisco General, but right now most of them take place in San Mateo or Marin County.
So finding a provider to provide transportation for people out of county has been very hard for the health plan, and obviously for us. So we need to know how they're getting back and forth to their follow-up appointments, because we need them to keep their follow-up appointments.
Right, because this is not something where you can just hop on BART or Caltrain.
Absolutely. It's not ideal at all. And you know, speaking of ideal, I did ask Julie Graham what they would do if they had a magic wand and could ask for anything for this program moving forward.
Our clients, our patients, don't have safe places to live. If you don't have a safe place to live, trying to recover from a serious surgery is a big deal. So we need places for people to recover from the surgeries, and, you know, really people need to have decent places to live. Transgender people are brutalized. Transgender women of color in particular are horribly targeted and abused. People need to be safe.
So what were your final takeaways from this reporting, Louisa?
Well, we know that attitudes around the country for transgender people really vary. But this is a vulnerable population, and they really need safe spaces for dealing with these life-changing events, and as Julie Graham said, for healing. That's happening in San Francisco and nearby counties, but it's certainly tough to be trans in this country in 2016.
Okay, thank you, Louisa.
Thank you, Hannah.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. If you think it sounds tough to be trans in regular society, imagine how hard it must be within prison walls. Which brings us to today's San Quentin Prison Report.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You can hear a pin drop.
San Quentin Men's Prison in Marin County houses over 4,000 inmates, and a small handful of them identify as transgender. Reporter Lewis A. Scott has the story of how one of them learned to stand her ground. And a note to our listeners, this story contains language some may find offensive.
I tried to tell the girls, you know, come in, act like a lady. Your actions dictate how men will treat other girls.
There are 4,000 men at San Quentin. Five of them identify as transgender. Today, Lewis Scott from SQPR brings us one story about life as a transgender in prison. Jarvis Clark prefers to be called Lady J.
I'm 5'10 and a half. A lady never gives her weight. I'm a mocha chocolate cappuccino complexion. I'm a 40 double D. I am a Keisha Cole double X. And if any of you know Keisha Cole, you know Keisha Cole is carrying wagon. I'm extremely curvaceous.
She identifies as a woman.
Well, what I do for makeup, one of the things we'll do, we'll take a magazine and with a razor, we'll scrape the pigment of the paint off of a magazine page, add a little bit of Vaseline with a very little bit of water. That could become eyeshadow and rouge and or lipstick. And you have to become a chemist in learning how to mix these colors. Being a woman in a man's prison, it could be so trying, and it's almost like I'm in hell. I'm isolated, I'm ostracized, I'm ridiculed, I'm talked about. Ooh, emotions.
She's been incarcerated for the past 24 years.
When I first came into prison, I had a very, very violent past. I was angry that I was in prison, first off, and I made up my mind that I would not be a victim.
When Lady J first came to prison in the 80s, she says it was a lonely and dangerous place for anyone who identified as transgender.
24 years ago, it was extremely violent. We walked alone. We were basically ostracized. So if you were transgender then and you stood up for yourself, you tended to get a little bit more respect.
One of the places where Lady J has felt the weight of gender bias coming down on her is in the shower room in the West Block. There are a total of 20 shower heads for the general population, and Lady J showers with the rest of the men.
Getting in the shower, guys tend to not want me to stand by them, and sometimes they have the audacity to kind of display it. For instance, the other day, I'm in the shower, so I'm waiting there, and I notice this young man who's mugging me. He looks away, and as I look up again, he's looking at me and he mouths the word faggot. I just stated the fact, get it right, I'm a transgender. And he puts his head down and in shame, he walks out the shower, thereby opening up a shower, and I got in.
Lady J tells me that this discrimination extends far beyond the shower areas. She says that because she confronts all forms of discrimination, she's become empowered to be a mentor for younger transgenders in prison.
Well, I know one of my responsibilities is to try to teach these young girls that come in how to have respect for themselves. Don't let a man dictate who you are and what you should be in his eyes. You are a woman. You're coming in as a woman. Treat and act accordingly.
I just said, there's no way I can walk around and allow somebody to call me, you know, the faggots, the homosexuals.
That's Crystal, another inmate who Lady J has taken under her wing. She says before coming to prison, she didn't have much guidance about her sexuality.
I thought love was just when a person has sex with me, I will automatically kind of like fall in love with them or in lust with them, whatever you want to call it. And allow them to dictate all my moves and to guide me and to use me.
Crystal says, had she had a mentor like Lady J on the outside, things may have turned out differently for her.
It's up to me to try to change the way these men look at transgenders in prison, because all of us are not loose. All of us are not HIV positive. So that's my mission, is to mentor the ones that will allow me to mentor them and to lead them in a more positive light.
Lady J's mission is a big one. She could be found hanging out on the yard socializing with some of the guys, but she never forgets that she's not one of them. According to her, she's a strong-willed, independent woman who stands up for the rights of herself as well as other transgenders here in San Quentin. She knows what it's like to be a woman in an all-men's prison. From San Quentin Prison Report, this is Lewis A. Scott.
KALW partners with radio producers inside San Quentin to bring you the award-winning San Quentin Prison Report, stories written and produced by those living inside the prison's walls. Find more stories like that at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And now it's time for your stories. This is StoryCorps. Chris Lopez always knew there was something a little different about her youngest child, Gabe. Although assigned female at birth, he always felt like a boy. Gabe Lopez, now 8 years old, talked to his mom about how one weekend at camp for transgender kids helped to transform his life.
Do you remember when things really changed for you?
We went to a camp and I met three best friends, Luke, Brock, and Cooper. They were all transgender like me, so they all wanted to be boys. Brock taught me how to pee standing up.
And that was huge for you, right?
Yeah. That's why I said we're bros. We know each other.
Do you ever get scared about what it's going to be like to grow up transgender?
I've been wondering if when I'm older, a lot of people will try to hurt me or something.
Like if they find out that you were born a girl and they have a problem with it?
Mm-hmm.
You think that they might try to hurt you in some way?
Yeah.
Were you ever worried about telling me that you were transgender?
Yes.
Did you ever try to tell me and then change your mind?
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you think?
I think like 4 times.
4 times.
I was worried that you liked me as a girl.
Because we used to have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Do we still have fun?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter if you're a boy or a girl, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were dealing with that on your own. If I'd known, I would have tried a little bit harder to have that conversation with you and maybe start it myself.
Do you worry about me?
I worry about how other people might treat you. And it makes me upset to think about what you might have to go through. You amaze me every day. You can tell me anything, anytime, anywhere, and it won't change how much I love you. I'll always have your back.
Thank you, Mom.
That was 8-year-old Gabe Lopez talking with his mom, Chris Lopez, in Tucson, Arizona. Their interview was part of the StoryCorps Out Loud project. And now we'd love to hear from you. Who would you love to interview in the StoryCorps booth and why? Tell us on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And make sure to subscribe to our brand spanking new podcast of favorite cross-current stories. It's called The Bridge. Find it on iTunes and on our podcast page, kalw.org/subscribe. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nicole Grigg, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Jurgen Klem, Abhilasha Madan, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Mary Williams. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producers were Luisa Cardosa and Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by a group that's been making music for a quarter century. They are the Brown Fellinis. They'll be celebrating their 25 years together on Saturday night at the Great American Music Hall. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.